Welcome back, folks. The UN this week came out with a report saying that Israel deliberately killed Palestinian children, resulting in genocide. This has been a very difficult pill to swallow for the people committing the genocide. Apparently, they're surprised by this. It's kind of shocking. Very interestingly, they're really having trouble trying to spin this one. It's not so easy. The Jerusalem Post feels the need to note that, sure, they may have killed a lot of kids, but it's worth noting that the UN report considers a child to be every human being below the age of 18 years. So, I mean, you know how, you know, it's like, yes, that's right. Children. Yes. Yeah. No, that's what we're saying. Like, that's the level they're resorting to is like, well, they said we killed a bunch of kids, but like, you know that they consider kids to be anyone that is, you know, younger than an adult. So, you know, how trustworthy is the UN really? Yeah, great point, Israel. I didn't think of it that way. Let's go to this video. This is Piers Morgan talking to John Spencer about the rate of civilian deaths in combatants in Gaza. Let's watch.
But John, do you believe that the ratio of civilian deaths to enemy combatant terrorist deaths in Gaza, for example, is the best ratio, if you like, that we've seen in modern warfare? Is that your belief?
And so I stated that early in the war when there are people doing false comparative analysis.
But do you still believe that about Gaza?
Absolutely.
Okay, so my question for you is very simple then.
It's aggregated.
Okay, but my question for you is very simple.
Piers, what is the...
No, but hang on, John. Let me finish my question. I will let you answer. I will let you answer, but because you've said that, let me just give you my question, which is this.
Sure.
To make that assessment, you would have to know how many civilians have been killed, wouldn't you?
Yep.
So how many is it?
So I take both the numbers that we all have available. I just I don't filter them through some prism of intentionality and already.
But no pro-Israeli guest has been able to tell me the numbers, so maybe you can enlighten everybody. How many civilians have been killed in Gaza?
Sure. So I take the Hamas number that they provide, which doesn't distinguish between civilian and combatants, and then I take the one that Israel provides. I have done enough research on all the numbers of any urban battle to understand when do we have a number and then how is it determined.
Sure, so how many civilians have been killed?
According to Hamas, 72,000.
And what is your belief?
My belief is that we don't have a number, but if we take Hamas's number and then we compare it to Israel's numbers of combatants, how many fighters do you think Hamas has got?
Let's take the Israel number of combatants. So I've asked Israeli ambassadors how many civilians have been killed. They can always tell me how many Hamas have been killed.
That's right.
But they can
oddly,
they can never tell me how many civilians have been killed. So my simple question for you is to make the assessment that the ratio has never been better than it is in Gaza in terms of combatants killed compared to civilians, you'd have to know both numbers. You have to, right? So my question, again, is simple. How many civilians have actually been killed in Gaza?
So that would be a question.
You don't know, do you?
Fair comment.
You don't know.
So when people talk about how many civilians have died, you just started the show talking about an indiscriminate number, a high number of civilians. You too don't have access to information to know that body.
No, but you're the one making the claim that the ratio is the best we've seen. I don't think it's unreasonable. I don't think it's unreasonable, John, in that context of that claim, to simply ask you that obviously to make that assessment, you must know how many civilians have been killed and how many Hamas terrorists have been killed. If you don't know, I don't know how you can make the assessment.
I mean, I guess you could challenge the qualitative analysis of any war in the history of war.
I'm only asking you about your claim. You said it was the best ratio, and yet I'm simply asking you, okay, so what is the ratio? How many civilians? How many Hamas?
No. I'm trying to explain to you the qualitative...
Yeah, that's not how this works, Piers. No, see, they make absurd statements. They make absurd just declarations, and then you're supposed to accept that. There's no follow-up questions for them to justify it. Just accept. Believe.
Let me announce the kickoff of the summer sale. This is going to run for 2 weeks, and different items for only 3 days will be buy one, get one free. Right now, it's Ultra Methylene Blue, the very best methylene blue. You've heard about methylene blue. Ours is medical grade. Buy one, get one free. Another big deal on Tri-Iodine, the best, cleanest iodine. Take action now. The start of summer sale kickoff is now live. And look at this. Nice black hat. High quality. With a nice leather patch made in the USA, just classy. And that's from Dickie. Really proud of that. And look at this bad boy. I designed this bad boy, or the concept. 1776 Redneck Deluxe. And that is good stuff with the two crossed musket rifles. That is a good looking, good old boy right there. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide. Get it all now at thealexjonesstore.com and stick your finger right in New World Order's all CNI and say, screw you, globalists. We're keeping Alex Jones on the air.
Welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. Remember, the start of summer kickoff sale is on right now for the next 2 weeks. We've got major deals on our best-selling products. Today's the last day to take advantage of the buy one, get one free on the methylene blue tincture. You're going to want to get that today. It ends tonight. The new sale is if you buy one bovine colostrum plus, you get a second one absolutely free. Buy one zeolite detox, and you get a second one of those for 50% off. This deal ends Monday, January 29th at midnight. Of course, Ultimate Power is back in stock and better than ever. Clean energy, sharp focus, ultimate power. And of course, today is one of the last days that you can order your 250th birthday t-shirt in order to get it for the 4th of July. So you want to order by June 28th. It's the 26th today. But don't wait. Place your order to make sure that you are decked out in patriotic gear from thealexjonesstore.com at your 4th of July barbecue. It's thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. So we got a lot of stories still to cover in this final hour, including what is going on in Europe, England in particular. Before we do that, we're going to stick with race and Judaism and anti-white hatred here in America, since it does seem to be the sort of underlying, you know, undercurrent driving so much of our politics these days. And I got to be honest, I'm kind of sick of the people who brought us to this point suddenly complaining about it. So it's a little bit infuriating. I mean, we played Ben Shapiro earlier, and he's a great example, right? Opposing at every pass. It's one thing if the left is opposing us. It's one thing if the left, with their anti-white racial extremism, we're used to that. We know that. And for people on our side, it's not a confusing point of division. But when you have people that claim to be on the right, they claim to be the conservative voice of America, and they're the ones calling you a racist for wanting to protect your heritage and your homeland, if they're the ones who are demonizing you for simply noticing the strategy by which the left is using racial grievance to gain power, it's a much, much, much bigger problem. When somebody like Ben Shapiro, with the profile that he has, with the stance, with the position of, you know, conservative authority that he has in America, it's actually extremely damaging, because what happens is maybe you do have politicians, maybe you do have congressmen and senators who are looking around and going, hey, white people aren't being treated very fairly here. This isn't right. And, you know, somehow Steve King was one of these. But of course, then he was immediately stripped of all of his committee assignments and basically forced out of the Congress, because he basically said exactly what I just said, where he's just like, what's wrong with white people? What's wrong with white power? Like, everybody else is bragging about their power. White people built this country, didn't they? And of course, it was Republicans and conservatives like Ben Shapiro, quote unquote conservatives, who were the first to demonize him and throw him to the side. I mean, even now you've got Ben Shapiro's butt buddy, Jeremy Boring, making entire, you know, podcasts, again, demonizing the resistance to this takeover. They're the ones causing. I'm kind of sick of this, to be honest with you. And then to be blamed for it on top of it. And then to have Ben Shapiro, who himself was one of the major bulwarks, one of the major barriers. Because again, if you have a congressman or senator that thinks maybe, hey, you know, I'm no white supremacist, I'm no racist, but I think it's unfair the way white people are being treated. If he's got a leftist saying, you can't say that, you're a white supremacist, he probably doesn't care. But if it's Ben Shapiro or his ilk going, ooh, that's, ooh, we got to stay away from, that's really dangerous territory you're going towards there. We can't have that. That is so much more damaging, so much more of a limitation for us just putting in place common sense, basic moral laws. It's people on our side that are even more damaging. But of course, we're getting it from both sides. And they both agree on this. Again, you want to know who's behind the DSA succeeding. Ben Shapiro is going to blame, how do you put it, overeducated, useless white people. The reality is, the vast majority of people who voted for the DSA were not white. In fact, I believe if you look at the breakdown of votes for Mamdani, I'm pretty sure a majority of Jews voted for Mamdani. I'm pretty sure the only demographic that didn't was white people. Okay? Meanwhile, foreign billionaire George Soros confirmed to be spending at least $102 million on Democrats for midterms. Another one of these overeducated, useless white women, right? George Soros. This is the same donor funding domestic terrorism in America. Investigations traced George Soros funding to 54 groups directly tied to domestic terrorism. Here's where it gets crazy. Each one of these groups also networks with as many as 300 separate entities orchestrating terrorism. We traced over $80 million from the Open Societies Foundation to at least 54 groups engaged in crime and domestic terrorism on U.S. soil or that are pro-terrorism, according to his own files, so it's rock solid. Over $23 million went to at least 7 groups that are doing things that meet the FBI's definition of domestic terrorism. George Soros has been linked to training terrorists on American soil. The Center for Third World Organizing, for example, is an organization that has a hub that fused together several really extreme organizations. We found $400,000 going to them, and they openly boast of the fact that they threw down during the uprisings in Minnesota, obviously referring to the rioting and boasting of how many thousands of people they helped train. A lot of these groups have created what they'll call a protest guide or activism toolkit. These same organizers staged protests and created activism toolkits. They engaged in direct action training, and their network openly glorified and supported riots like the 2020 George Floyd unrest, Antifa-linked protest, and pro-Palestinian protest. They trained in confrontational and disruptive protests, including property damage. This is domestic terrorism, and somehow George Soros isn't being arrested. Gosh, whatever could it be? What is protecting him, I wonder? This, of course, is from all the way back in 2014, these documents showing direct coordination between not just the Antifa terrorists who were egging on the Black Lives Matter rioters to do things like throw rocks at cops, but also with the cops themselves and the power structure there in the municipality of Baltimore that they were in cahoots with. This, of course, was run by George Soros's son, not Alexander Soros, but Jonathan Soros, who was running the Friends of Democracy program. Why? Why are we not arresting all of these people? Why are we not rounding up the networks of domestic terrorists? After all, Donald Trump declared Antifa domestic terrorists 6 months ago. The whole point of doing that was because then you could shut down their bank accounts. Then you could investigate who gave them money. Then you could arrest the people, not just the mindless thugs carrying out orders they don't even understand, but what about the people giving them the orders? What about people funding their networks or coordinating their action? None of them have been gone after. So again, sorry if I'm a little bit disbelieving of Donald Trump's claims that he takes communism really seriously and is fighting it with everything he's got. He has more tools at his disposal to destroy this crap than he could ever possibly need, and yet he never does anything about it. George Soros, of course, not American. I don't even know where he lives. We don't even know. I mean, is he's just some foreign dude with an infinite amount of money, an agent of the Rothschilds, who systematically undercuts our entire system routinely, hundreds of millions of dollars. God only knows how many deaths this man is responsible for as a consequence of his funding of AGs that refuse to enforce the law. But we just take it. We just allow it to happen. And then we allow people like Ben Shapiro to blame us for it. It is our fault because we're not taking the threat they pose seriously. And I got, it's just, there are parts that are infuriating and there are parts that are genuinely funny. I don't know which one this is. I'm about to show you a video. I don't know if I should laugh or rage. Let's go to clip number 31 here. This is kind of, in a nutshell, this is like the mindset that we're dealing with. And this is why you don't argue with communists. This is why you don't debate with communists. This is why you crush communists. Because listen to this lady. Clip number 31. You tell me if this is the type of person you're going to waste your precious breath saying a single word to, or if she should just be arrested and expelled from the country. Where do you want to put your energy? Here is a Haitian immigrant in Massachusetts, of all places, talking about the fact that temporary protected status has now been removed from Haitians and Syrians. Let's watch.
This is the time for all of us to raise our voices and to say this country is also our country, is also the country of our immigrants, because we are the one who built it.
Think she's open to a high-level discussion about the contributions the immigrant population has had on America? I mean, I hope I don't need to explain to you. I hope I don't need to elaborate on what should be just imminently obvious to absolutely everybody. The thing she just said, like, it does, it's so stupid I don't even know how to discuss it. What is the one aspect of an immigrant that makes them an immigrant? What is the one thing that you can say defines every single immigrant you could point to? The one thing that immigrant means is that you did not help build this country. It means you just got here. What are you supposed to say to this type of person? We built this country. We immigrants built this country. She thinks Haitians and Syrians built this country. She thinks she built a country she just arrived in. Like, what? How could that even be? What? Just what? Like, that's what I literally don't have any way to even combat this. I mean, they're literally saying the people that just showed up here somehow built this country. I mean, when she goes in a store, does she think she built the store? Like, you know, she walks into Target and she's like, this is a magnificent Target I built, that I put together. I know I just walked in 5 seconds ago, but now that I'm here, I'm pretty sure I'm responsible for all of this. I'm pretty sure this was me, actually. And I'm just as American as you, she says, through an accent you can hardly understand. We don't need to listen to what foreigners think America is. We don't need to give any credence to their insane ramblings. We do not need to try to explain to them. Yeah, look at me. I built this ship with my bare hands. Exactly. I built this ship. This ship would not exist without me. You just got on here and you got on here illegally. Imagine breaking into a house and being like, I'm pretty sure I built this house. Pretty sure this is mine. Pretty sure I'm the reason this is here. They need to go away. They need to be sent home. Hey, they did such a wonderful job with America. Go do it in Haiti. Honestly, we should not give Haiti back to them. Why are we not in charge of Haiti? That's my real question. Why do we have just a genuine failed state right off our coast that we just don't care? We just don't care that an island nation like 50 miles from us is literally descending into cannibalism because they're run by a prison gang lord named Barbecue. And there was talk for a while that was like 100 American dudes with guns could probably take over Haiti. Like, why haven't we done that? It would solve a lot of our problems. It would obviously solve the Haitian immigration problem. We can just keep them there, send them back there. It would also solve all of the problems that we've had this entire time with where to send the immigrants. It's like, all these, like, we have an agreement with Timbuktu that they're going to take some of our, we're going to send some of them to the supermax in El Salvador. It's like, why don't we just send like one battalion of Marines to Haiti? It'll be ours. And then we just put them all there. It would actually probably improve Haiti to have American investments building prisons there to send all of our illegal immigrants. Let's make Haiti a colony of America and use it to store all of the Haitians that have come over here. It's a one-size-fits-all solution. I think it would be extremely easy. How is Haiti the only Caribbean country that Trump hasn't threatened to overthrow yet? It doesn't even have a leader. I haven't checked in a while, but for a long time, it was like, you go to the Wikipedia of Haiti, and it's like, what's Haiti's government structure? And it was kind of like, we don't know. It doesn't really have one. There's a guy who calls himself the president, but his name is Barbecue, and he was basically just the biggest and strongest prisoner. So I guess he's in charge. I guess he's a king? Is he a king? I don't know. You know, what do you call it when there is no governmental structure, when it's just armed men killing each other? What type of government program, what type of government structure is that? I guess it makes sense. We can't overthrow a government. It's actually brilliant. Maybe Haiti figured out the one way to avoid having your power structure overthrown by America. It's just not to have one. Just thinking about the fact these people are in our country, and it's just astonishing. It's genuinely mind blowing. Getting invited to your black friend's barbecue. He's Haitian. Yeah. Well, you don't like cat? You don't like eating cat? Of course, Mamdani posted these photos. Ashura is a time of remembrance, sacrifice, and reflection. Okay, if you say so. Today, on the 10th day of Muharram, we are reminded of Imam Hussein's unwavering commitment to truth and dignity, his timeless legacy. Where are the women? Sorry to interrupt there, Mamdani. Why are you in a room with nothing but men? I'm sorry. I thought you were a progressive leftist Democrat. I thought your whole point was that, you know, white men are evil and it's white people, but it's also men, right? Like, why are there no women in your celebration? Because you adhere to a barbarous and backwards religion that is completely incompatible with modern American sentiments? And yet you're voted for by all the leftists. You can't talk to these people. What do you, I really want to know. And I do wish that leftists would talk to us. It's obvious why they don't, because, you know, you see how it goes usually. But like, I wish a leftist would talk to us, because I would love to like actually get their response. Then again, I know what it would be. It would just be, you're a bigot, because they don't actually care. They don't actually care that the exact same people that will harp on endlessly about non-existent patriarchy here in America, when presented with the reality of the fact that they are actively importing a deeply misogynistic culture, they will just call you bigoted for recognizing that, because their brains are broken. We have to stop trying to talk to them. We have to just put them in their place. I'm just going to keep repeating that message over and over until somebody does something about it. Let's go to this clip here. A Jewish student was subjected to persistent and escalating anti-Semitic harassment at a Colorado middle school, and the school failed to stop it from continuing. This is Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL, clip number 8, talking about an anti-Semitic experience in school. Being targeted by a school for your ethnicity? I didn't realize this happened to anybody except for white people. Let's watch.
Where, again, this kid was harassed incessantly by his classmates, and the school did nothing. So we filed this case. Mm-hmm. I'm glad Boulder Valley District School System's already reached out to us. But proof's in the pudding. Like, I want to see every teacher get trained to make sure that, again, they don't accept anti-Semitism.
And you know they're going to get it. And you know they're going to get it because this is what happens for everybody except for white people. Same thing happened with the NAACP in Loudoun County, where they did some course about slavery. The black parents objected. And, of course, you know, the school districts themselves are, like, eager to do whatever they can to comply. Right. If you go and you go, hey, you're teaching a course about how white people are evil, you need to stop. It'll be, I don't know if we are you a racist? Are you a white supremacist? Is that why you're asking? If it's a black person going, hey, I don't want my, you know, kid being taught about slavery. The same thing happened with them. They actually created an entire office. They employed somebody full time to oversee the entire school district's curriculum to make sure it comported with their idea. It's the same thing the ADL is doing. The school can apologize, and I'm sure they did immediately. I'm sure it was just like right out of the, and God only knows the actual details of this. You know, who knows? But, you know, the ADL is not like, hey, look, this was an unfortunate oversight, and we know you don't have the best, you know, we know that you, the Boulder School District, don't have bad intentions, but we wanted to make you aware of this, and thank you for, you know, working to, you know, deal with this one totally unique instance. No, it becomes, we need to write their curriculum now. Actually, now we need control of your school district. You have violated our sovereign right to exist without criticism. You've criticized us. Now you need, and we are going to have an office in your district. We need to see your whole curriculum. We need to see every single employee trained by us in our mindset. And they need to adhere to that or they need to be fired. It's just, if, tell you what, if Jews could turn it down by about 10 notches and whites could ramp it up by about 2 notches, everything would be good. Everything would be cool. We could deal with the anti-white crap by dealing with the anti-white crap. The anti-Jew crap could actually be handled in a way that is commensurate with the actual offense. But for some reason, for some inexplicable slash deeply historically relevant reason, white people under constant abuse in this country never do anything to stop it, whereas every other minority group has gigantic conglomerates, gigantic NGO networks that will wield inordinate power with infinite money to not just correct a mistake or get rid of a lie that's being told, but to force themselves into your organization so that they can then have oversight over absolutely everything that you do. Enough, enough, enough. Especially when it's the ADL themselves who is responsible for spreading a huge amount of the anti-whiteism out there. This is from the ADL itself. Discussions of privilege, specifically white privilege, require advanced skills and anti-bias education. Teaching about it requires a solid foundation for you and your students in understanding conscious bias. We have to be able to discuss white privilege with students. It'd be helpful for you to read or reread Peggy McIntosh's White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack, and Expert from Privilege, Power and Difference by Alan G. Johnson. So, like, just shut up. You all need to shut up. You all are genuinely the ones responsible for all of this. And for some reason, you keep pushing. For some reason, you haven't stopped. The consequences are already starting to mount up, and they're still pushing to demonize white people and further insinuate themselves into our controlled power structure.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are listener and viewer supported. It's very simple. TheAlexShowStore.com. You back us. You fund us. You are everything. And we bring you the very best products, the very best supplements, the very best water filtration systems, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, the very best knives, silver coins, you name it, so that you get a great product and empower yourself while at the same time empowering yourself and free humanity against the globalists. So, a lot of new things at TheAlexShowStore.com. Look at these belts. They are super comfortable. They are incredible high quality. They are so durable. They'll last a lifetime. And the way they're designed is something special. So I paid like $75 a year or so ago for a similar belt. And I told Bigley, I like this type of belt. Why don't you get these? They got belts even better than the one I bought about a year ago that I love. And they're selling them for $39 right now. That is a big discount out of the gates at theellisshowstore.com. Premium nylon tactical belt. This is the premium nylon tactical belt available now at theellisshowstore.com for only $39.99. It's built from heavy-duty nylon webbing with a smooth automatic ratchet buckle. No holes, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. You get a perfect micro-adjustable fit whether you're working, carrying, driving, sitting at your desk, or on the move. And we've got them in three editions. On the buckle is a little cross, a 1776 edition, and Alex Jones signature edition, making it original and special. It's all black, tactical, clean, durable, and built for everyday use. It's murdered out. It's off black. And right now it's only $39 at thealexjonesstore.com. They are premium. They look great. They have knocked it out of the park with this product. Get yours today, and also buy gifts for friends and family, and know you're funding the tip of the spear in the fight against tyranny. Also, Bigley knocked it out. Highest rating, level with the carbon filters, beautiful, highest grade stainless steel for lower price than other systems that aren't even as good. We're so proud of this. The first group sold out. More coming in about a week and a half. So get your order in now to make sure it's ahead of the line. Those are now available. This is platinum level, gravity fed water filtration, and it makes this operation possible. Multi-tested by top companies to take out hundreds and hundreds of bad chemicals at non-detectable levels, the atrazine, the glyphosate, all of it. You should do this for your family. Do this for yourself. It's a big 3-gallon system. It's amazing. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And then we have the widest selection of Patriot apparel. Some of the designs are the best. Some of them are okay. I'll just be honest. Some of the designs I come up with are okay. But I came up with the concepts of these new shirts. Limited edition, 250th anniversary of America, July 4th, special edition. So it's sold through the middle of June, through July, and then we're not going to sell these T-shirts anymore. They look so good, they'll probably come up with another variant or something. But these are limited edition, Liberty or Death, 1776, 2026. They came up with that. I love it. The simple one I came up with, America, 250 years strong, nice, simple, clean, kind of got like a polo look to it. Look at that one. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. Gadsden flag on the Betsy Ross flag. I came up with that design. I'm really proud of these. They're very clean. You'll meet a lot of like-minded people wearing these. Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. I designed that bad boy. They designed the 1776, 250 years of freedom. Oh, I love the one they designed with the brass knuckles, 1776 free. Defund the deep state. That's all their designs. America, ride fast, live free. They designed that. Ball caps as well. All limited edition. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And to keep us on the air, take action now. Big Brother hates it when you fund the tip of the spear. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
The good news, ladies and gentlemen, is that the ADL themselves provide us with everything we need to know. Well, everything they need to know, actually, about how to deal with this new uncertain world that we find ourselves in. They never had to really worry about this before because of, you know, their insane power. But that's waning now as a consequence of the, you know, multiple genocides currently being carried out. But luckily, like we've said, the ADL has spent the last decade very kindly instructing white people on how to understand and come to terms with the fact that they're being attacked, how to accept and actually agree with the very people demonizing them. So I think you can take your own lesson here. I think you can take your own medicine. And lucky for you, I know you've tried to delete the story, but I found it on the Wayback Machine. How should I talk about race in my mostly Jewish classroom? Because they talk about what an important thing it is to discuss race, in particular things like white privilege. Well, lucky for you, this is a fantastic way to now talk about Jewish privilege. Okay? Jewish students in a predominantly Jewish classroom should be discussing Judaism for the same reasons and because they are members of a multicultural society in the world. Sometimes teachers feel reluctant to raise the topic of Jews, especially if they're teaching in an all or predominantly Jewish community. Teachers may be concerned that students bring their own assumptions and stereotypes, will hold back for fear of saying the wrong thing, or bias will emerge and will be hard to facilitate and contain. Also, teachers may fear pushback from administrators or parents who feel they shouldn't talk about it at all. But y'all, just like the ADL says, it is your obligation to talk about Jewish privilege. I know it's going to be uncomfortable, but luckily the ADL has plenty of guidelines and tips for the Jews out there that may feel uncomfortable with the discussion of your power and how it's going to be ended. So you've got to get over it now, which again, you were kind enough, lovely enough to teach us stupid white people how to accept this. And now it's your turn. Okay. Students in particular, Jewish students don't want to participate. Yeah, I bet they wouldn't. Bet they don't. Sometimes don't participate in discussions about Judaism. Because they feel inadequate, they'll be mocked, embarrassed by their lack of knowledge, or concerned that strong feelings will arise. Many may think the topic isn't relevant to them. When engaging any conversations about tough topics, it's critical to set up group guidelines or agreements to promote classroom environment that is safe and respectful. Do this collaboratively with students to make sure that following areas are discussed: listening and interrupting, how to deal with strong emotions. See, I think Jonathan Greenblatt, Ben Shapiro, you're experiencing some pretty strong emotions right now, and that's understandable. But you've got to suppress those because we're trying to have an adult conversation here, okay? So glad we have this guideline, these guidelines. It's amazing. It's helpful to remember and share with students that are often deep learning, the kind that is lasting and long-term, comes when things are uncomfortable or quote-unquote sticky, and you're able to work through these things. That's the aha epiphany moment. It might also be helpful to explain to students that often when things are complicated or when there's conflict, if things are handled well, there can be higher understanding or improved relations on the other side. Okay? But, you know, tip number three is very important. The goal is not to be pro-Semitic. Okay? They say colorblind. Like, we're not trying to just ignore the differences here. Okay? The goal of teaching about Jews and Judaism is to help students understand the historical context and current manifestations of Judaism in the United States. While there are many Jews who believe the best way to eliminate anti-Semitism is to not talk about it, not notice religious differences at all, i.e. be colorblind, they may want to tell young people to not to notice differences because they conflate noticing differences with having bias. It may also be a way to avoid dealing with discussions of Judaism because they're not because they are uncomfortable. It's completely natural to notice Judaism and other physical characteristics. Telling children not to see it is incorrect and confusing. Let students know that noticing differences does not promote bias. Judging and discrimination based on Judaism does. Further, it's important to acknowledge that Jewish is a racial identity and even explore with students what being Jewish means to them. You may also want to share with parents that you're talking about these issues because some Jewish parents may believe that talking about Judaism makes them or their children anti-Semitic. Okay, so look, you just need to, reach out to Jewish parents and say, hey, look, we're going to talk to your children about how their race, the Jews, are responsible for all the evil in the world. And you're going to maybe experience some strong emotions about this, but that's totally natural and normal. And that's part of the process of working through and accepting our demonization of you. Do you understand? Because this is what the ADL has been telling white parents and white students since 2017 when this article was published. So, again, are we in a system of equality here? Are these types of conversations we should be having in public schools? Because this instruction booklet is for teachers to talk about white privilege. Now, white privilege doesn't actually exist, never did. Jewish privilege, on the other hand, oh boy, you start looking for that, you'll find it. But of course, we're going to provide opportunities for Jews to learn and to empathize with non-Jews, okay? You haven't been taught to empathize yet, but we're going to correct that, okay? Just sit down and listen, all right? A white man is talking. Regardless of whether or not the religious diversity of our larger society is represented in your school, it's important to bring diverse voices and perspectives into the classroom and in other ways besides personal sharing. This is particularly true if you have a predominantly Jewish school and you're talking about Judaism. Use children's books, short videos, movies, literature, stories by teens, or arrange a video chat to expose students to other voices on Judaism, as this fifth grade teacher did. So yeah, you want to sort of meet them where they are, right? Because again, you're the last thing you want, if you're a Jew out there and you like the white people, you want to teach your fellow Jews what a problem they are, what a privilege, what privilege they enjoy and how they have a responsibility to use that privilege for the betterment of everybody, not just Jewish supremacy. If you're thinking, you don't want to like drive them away by hitting them too hard, right? You want to ease them into it. You want to have some cool teenagers come in, talk to the 10th graders about how Jews are responsible for all the evil in the world and how, we live in a system of Jewish supremacy that must be torn down. You want to like have like a cool cartoon to express that, because if you just come out and say it, obviously Jewish privilege, like an aspect of that is that they're going to push back, obviously, right? So we want to address Jewish privilege in non-defensive ways. That's what I'm expressing here. Address Jewish privilege and the term Jewish privilege, okay, is one that often produces anxiety and defensiveness among Jewish people. Well, that's what happens when you're raised with this supremacist ideology, including students. At the same time, if a student is going to engage in conversations about religion, privilege has to be on the table. The goal of a discussion about Jewish privilege is not to make anyone feel guilty for who they are, defensive about their lot in life. The goal is to help students understand and analyze issues of power and privilege as they relate to Judaism. One way to start the conversation is to talk with students about the ways bias manifests in institutions, i.e. discrimination. Explain that bias can impact people in two ways, by discriminating against somebody or advantaging others, depending on religion and other aspects of identity. Right? So, Jews may have sort of unconscious Judaism, unconscious Jewish bias. They may be unwilling to acknowledge their privilege, but we're going to help them through this. We're going to help them. We're going to instruct them, because after all, we are the light to the world, and it's up to us to draw Jews out of the darkness of privilege and supremacy and into the light of multiculturalism, okay? Define Jewish privilege. Sorry, just correcting the ADL's statement here. Define Jewish privilege as unearned and often unseen or unrecognized advantages, benefits, or rights conferred upon people based upon membership in, says, a dominant group, i.e. white people, heterosexual people, men, able-bodied, we'll just say Judaism. There you go. Based on their membership in Judaism, beyond what is commonly experienced by members of the non-Jewish group. Like getting into college and stuff. Another angle to discuss privilege is to talk with your students about the ways they feel disempowered or discriminated against as young people, often through ageism directed towards them. This can include things like not being allowed to do certain things when they think they should be allowed to, assumptions adults make about them, and discriminatory acts that target them. Yeah, you're going to want to, emphasize and try to foster, and if it's not there, then try to create division between the students and their parents, for sure. It's important to identify dominant identities, i.e. being white, because students may not accept that they have white privilege by saying they belong to another marginalized group, but I'm gay, poor, female. Well, that may be true. It doesn't erase. Okay, sorry, I forgot to change. Okay, so So how should we do this? Students can reflect on ways as they, as young people, lack privilege in these situations. This discussion will help them understand the concept of privilege without getting defensive, and it will help to foster empathy. You can then make the connection to Jewish privilege. Okay, so first you start off by just going, well, everybody has privilege. Older people have privileges you young people don't have. What are ways in which Jewish people also have privilege that you don't have? See how easy that is to sort of move from, a genuine conversation about, rights and who has them and who doesn't, to then actively demonizing one people group because of how they were born. See how easy it is to do that with the instruction of the ADL, how they've been instructing our teachers to do for a long time now? Since you've set the groundwork, hopefully the leap to Jewish privilege isn't too far of a reach for them. It will be important to identify dominant identities, i.e. Jewish, because students may not accept that they have Jewish privilege by saying they belong to another marginalized group. But the Holocaust. While that may be true, it doesn't erase their Jewish identity, okay? You're always Jewish, and you're going to be Jewish. Doesn't matter if you, you know, do things that might mitigate that privilege that you enjoy. I mean, is this, can I be done now? Is this not, is it not obvious the point I'm trying to make? When you read a statement from the self-appointed Jewish overlords at the ADL that they published 10 years ago as an instruction booklet for teachers, and if you replace one word with another, you replace white with Jews, and it suddenly feels like an instruction booklet on how to indoctrinate children into being Nazis, is it not clear why these people are poisonous to our entire society? How they are the ones responsible for Mam Dani, the immigration, and everything else that we're dealing with, because they literally have this incredible power. I'm talking about the ADL specifically. They've been around since 1913. They've had veto power over everything published in America since the 1950s. They are writing Sunday school curriculum in addition to public school curriculum. By the way, they're also deeply ingrained and have positions of power in every single AI company that, again, Jonathan Greenblatt himself brags about, constantly goes on and on about ChatGPT, Gemini, you know, OpenAI. We are in all of their ears, talking to them, making sure that they tell the, that their programs tell the truth. Is it any surprise? AI chatbots have a massive left-wing bias. ChatGPT is the biggest offender. A new analysis by the Washington Post has found several leading artificial intelligence chatbots lean left on political questions, with OpenAI's ChatGPT producing the most one-sided responses of any major AI model tested. ChatGPT, whose logo is the Star of David, who is taking direction directly from the ADL about how to program their bots. Oh, but it's overeducated white people, I'm sure. So look, the ADL can just take its own advice. It may be, Jonathan May Greenblatt may be feeling, you know, defensive that his privilege is being called out, but this is a process you're going to have to go through as we all learn to live in this multicultural world. You know, the Jews are not going to survive if they don't learn to give up their privilege and supremacy. ADL ranks Grok as the worst AI chatbot at detecting anti-Semitism, rates Claude the best. Why is the ADL allowed to exist? Here's a question. Why is the ADL allowed to exist? What do they do? Like, what benefit do they provide? They're not like a charity, right? They're not like helping the downtrodden. We just have this organization that just appoints itself at the head of our AI, our education system. They train our FBI. And they're just anti-American Jewish supremacists. I'm looking forward to, Ben Shapiro breaking this down next. Kidding. That's never going to happen. From ANC_aesthetics on X, the best thing the Trump administration could do in response to the communist terrorists being elected by New York City Dems is to just denaturalize and deport them using the Immigration and Nationality Act and the Communist Control Act of 1954. They are completely within their rights to do this. It would create a national scandal that would force mainstream Democrats to defend these radical communists, which they don't want to do. They want to ignore them. More importantly, it sets a precedent and severely hampers the long-term plans of the DSA communist left. But it's also just an act of survival. It's also just like the bare minimum we could do to not be taken over by radical communists is just deport the lawbreakers who got into our country by lying. It's like a million, there's a million billion ways to do it. The Communist Control Act of 1954 would be one of them. an act to outlaw the Communist Party, prohibit members of communist organizations from serving in certain representative capacities and for other purposes. And these people are avowed communists. And we played the clip earlier this week. I'm not even sure if we played it on my show, but you know, earlier this week, it was one of these socialist women. I think it was the Chevalier woman. She was asked, are you a communist? And she's like, well, you know, we have a knee-jerk reaction to that. It's like, okay, so yes. So the answer is yes, she should go to jail. So the answer is yes, she should be deported immediately. It's not complicated. It's very simple. And people are, again, it's getting to a point where people are sick of the way things are going. They're sick of just the obvious racial motivation being ignored by the people that agree with the racial motivation. Let's go to clip number 15 here. This is Megyn Kelly saying what genuinely every single American should be saying to every single Haitian TPS receiver here in America. Here's Megyn Kelly.
And look, this has been going on for over a dozen years. Go home. Get out. We know our country's better than yours. That's because we filled it with our work ethic and our culture and our values.
And our people.
You being here only dilutes it for us, those who built it and live it. And half of you people, more than half, you won't assimilate. We don't want you. We don't care if you're offended. Get out. Go home. Go back to Haiti. Sorry. I'm thinking about our friends in Ohio who've been dealing with these TPS Haitians for years now, who are drunk driving all over their towns and killing people. This is the whole cats and dogs thing. Like, they don't want to live like Americans live. And this was supposed to be a temporary, it was supposed to be temporary help. And it's turned into another backdoor way of allowing someone permanent residency here. And they take advantage of all of our public services and
You have nothing to apologize for, lady. She's like, sorry. Sorry I referred to their homeland as effing Haiti, but like, no, seriously, they need to go back. No, they need to go back right away. And I wouldn't even be that, like, offensive about it, except that they don't even appreciate what we've given them. You know, the video that we showed her, it wasn't the woman saying, this country's amazing, you know, It's the place of dreams. You've given me and my family so much, and all we want to do is stay here and be good citizens and help you build it. No, no. They feel entitled to it. They feel like they already own it. They actually feel like we somehow stole it from them. So, like, they have to go. You all have to go. You show me somebody who's said, hey, look, you know, Haiti sucks, and I'm so glad I'm here, and I really don't want to leave because you guys are way better at running a civilization than we are. Like, okay, now we're talking. Now we have a little bit of, at the very least, you could show some appreciation for what you've been given out of the goodness of our hearts. But it's the fact that they literally feel entitled to it, that they feel as though they are the power and that they're offended that we won't just give them what they want. We have to not give it to them anymore. We have to. This is just how the world works. Like, you can't let people like this get away with this crap. They have to be sent back. And if they won't go back, they have to be imprisoned. It's beyond ridiculous. Let's go now to clip number... Well, you know what? Let's go to clip number 18 here while we're at it. Considering the fact that we're talking about all the demonization... of white cultures, the hatred and vitriol all of these foreign people from failed states feel about America. So they're here to correct us and fix us because we can't do anything ourselves. This is actually happening right now in Africa. Let's watch. It's all of the Christian slaves. Go ahead and roll it. Okay? So this is actively happening right now in their homelands. People that are over here telling us how much better they are than us, telling us how much they have to teach us, telling us they built America, telling us they're settling in our country as revenge for colonialism. This is what we stopped when we got there. This is what white people put a stop to. And only since we've been convinced to abandon our authority in Africa? Has it returned with a menace? And for our radio listeners, you just saw a line of about 100 guys with their elbows tied behind their backs together, tied one to the next in single file line, being marched to the slave market. So that's actively happening right now in their countries. The people that do this come over to our country, like Ilhan Omar and her family, and then continue to pledge allegiance to their home country that's busy enslaving people and basically are incapable of rising above the moral basement that Europe got out of in the 400s. So spare me. Let's go to clip number 10 here. This is a Minnesota politician, also no longer feeling constrained by the claims of racism. Let's watch.
Guess what? There is nothing racist about calling out a criminal. So when I say that it's time. I mean, this is what they do in the great state of Minnesota. You know, our culture, that Scandinavian culture, by the way, I better make it clear before I go any farther. Minnesotans, are there any here? Ah, good. Then let me just say, okay, well, born, yeah, you're wearing that hat. You must be from northern Minnesota, the Iron Range. No, probably closer to Iowa. No, I'm going to leave that alone. The reason I bring it up is because I tell people regularly, Minnesota did not create passive-aggressive behavior, but we did perfect it, okay? And I happen to be more on the aggressive-aggressive side, which doesn't always work in Minnesota, as Ralph will tell you. You know, sometimes Minnesotans are so afraid that you're going to call us a racist, you're going to call us an Islamophobe, you're going to call us some name that we just don't want to get into that fight. You know what? I would argue that I never did care, but I'm done being careful, even the least bit careful. And I don't really care where you come from, but if you come to this great country, you have to understand you're coming here to be an American. We celebrate everyone's culture. We're happy with that as long as you are an American. Celebrate your culture. I don't care. Italian, Polish, Somali, okay? But they don't assimilate. And if they don't assimilate, then they should go the hell back to where they came from.
Amen. I mean, where have these guys been the last 80 years? It's not complicated. It doesn't mean you hate them. You have to protect yourself. You have to protect your family. You have to protect your nation. And when somebody comes here with the intention of destroying your nation, you don't have to feel guilty about kicking them in the ass on the way back home.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are. But don't despair. We've found a solution. Follow me. I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs.
Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.